podcast of verbal narcissism for ugly journalists.
Hello, can I talk to Mr. David? Jay Bowman?
Approach and identify.
Hello?
It's just like your cat at home, except a much larger, scarier version.
From the packed Northwest studio of the Podcast 99 Network, located in beautiful downtown Silverdale, Washington, this is Plausibly Live, the Dave Bowman Show podcast. Now, here's your host, the submarine qualified, well-coffeed, rules-driven, elitist history buff, Dave Bowman.
Weapons con, you have permission to fire.
Weapons on.
Well, good morning, good evening, or good afternoon, wherever you are, whatever you do, a lot of things happening in the world today, most of them far beyond our control, you might say. So, perhaps it's time we took a pause and thought about life, thought about the laws of gravity, norks, suicide, Google ads, war without end, and humanity. Don't touch that dial, just try to hear me out for a while. The world is waiting. This evening, our time, the face-to-face meeting between the United States and North Korea will happen. Never thought I would say that. Google says no to political ads in Washington State, and another U.S. soldier dies in the war without end, without explanation. Here's how you get a hold of me. Tech Machine, area code 209-565-DAVE. It's 565-3283. The email, dave@thedavebowmanshow.com. And, of course, we're on the web. Just look for The Dave Bowman Show on Facebook, Twitter, iTunes, and via your preferred non-denominational web search engine, The Dave Bowman Show. Hello, qui conizio. The greatest enemy of knowledge is not ignorance. It is the illusion of knowledge. Mondays are great. I'm probably one of the few people that says that. Mondays are wonderful. Everybody else, I hate Monday. I got to go back to work. I like Mondays because there's so much stuff. I mean, it's like, it's almost hard to narrow down what you want to do on a Monday on a talk show. I mean, I didn't even know the Tonys were happening last night. I had no clue. Don't pay attention to the theater. It's not that I don't like plays. It's just that, well, I didn't have any interest in it. I certainly am not going to watch the Tonys. I don't watch the Oscars. Why in God's name would I watch the Tonys? Well, let's see what else is happening here. Baseball is getting excited. Shohei Ohtani, for those of you that are paying attention to that, the Angels are absolutely livid this morning. The Los Angeles Angels of Anaheim are furious because there are spurious reports that Shohei Ohtani will need Tommy John surgery and miss the next 2 years. And they are absolutely livid. And if you don't follow baseball, you won't understand that at all. I did a lot of reading this weekend over some history stuff that was just fascinating that I could spend hours talking about. There's a subject we're going to get into later in the week, credentialism running amok, and speaking to our education system. So we'll get into some of that. We've got all of this stuff happening. But, of course, the biggest news in the world today right now is this meeting, which is supposed to start. I'm in the Pacific time zone, so it's supposed to start literally tomorrow morning, which is this evening here because of the time difference. It's around 6 p.m. There'll be a big photo op followed by the two leaders going behind closed doors with their translators and having their chit chat about whatever it is that's going to happen. I never thought I'd say that. I really didn't. Even back when we were just starting to talk about this idea of the summit, I really didn't think that it would happen. I was hopeful, but the idea that this would actually happen is, in my world, in my view, in my Cold War mentality, was so far-fetched as to be almost unthinkable in some ways. I'm still not convinced that this is going to be anything. But then I watched this morning the interview with the mayor of Singapore, who apparently had a sit down with Kim Jong yesterday, or today, our time, depending on how you want to look at it. And his comment was very poignant. He said, I don't think Kim Jong would be here if he wasn't willing, if he wasn't ready for something to come out of this. I don't think he would be. And maybe there's something to that. Maybe there is some element here that I'm overlooking. There was a time when the Soviet Union was starving, it was falling apart, and all of a sudden perestroika came along and glasnost, all those terms that seem to have faded into history now, when there was a willingness to talk because there really wasn't anything else to do. It wasn't that the Soviets were all that anxious to give up. It's just that they really didn't have anything. There wasn't anything left. And maybe North Korea has reached that point. Maybe Kim Jong is the first Kim Jong because he's been around the world a little bit. Maybe he's the first one to realize that there's nothing left in the tank. And if we're going to survive as a people, and if I'm going to survive as a leader, maybe it's time to open up the Hermit Kingdom here a little bit and talk. And by the way, the Hermit Kingdom is a nickname that's been around since basically the Middle Ages. So that's nothing new for Korea. I don't know. Certainly South Korea has become a huge part of the world. Certainly a big part of the economy. And with the natural resources that North Korea possesses, there's no reason for their people to be starving. There really isn't. Other than the fact that the Kim Jongs have kept their thumb on these folks as a dictatorship for so long that it has been virtually impossible to move forward. But there's no reason for that. I don't know what's going to come up tonight. My mind is awash in scenarios. I mean, I have every crazy scenario in my head for what's going to happen today. From they're going to walk out of that meeting handshake with a peace treaty saying the war is over and the border's coming down and, we'll still be separate countries, but trade and all that stuff, to this is a big old plot to commit a war crime and everything in between. But what if it's just the first step? Who knows? Maybe what they agree to at this meeting, I guess the most likely thing is that it's time to start talking and we're going to have more talks. We'll see. I can't speak for anybody else, but obviously I'll be watching TV at 6:00 PM our time here because I want to see it. And then I'll gripe about not believing everything I see on TV. Because that's what you do. That's how we handle it. That's where we go. And I there are some funny things happening already. I'm watching leftist progressive media this morning explain to the president what he has to do at this. The same people whose policies have spent the last, however many years appeasing North Korea are now explaining to Donald Trump what he has to do. And I'm sure he's listening. I'm sure he's, glued to the TV to go, they think I should say this. Which is the most surefire way to get him to not say that. And surely they figured that out by now. So they're doing it on purpose to get him to do the opposite. Who knows? We'll see what happens. I'm fascinated by it all. And I just, when you consider the hair trigger that is the Korean Peninsula and what could happen. I was watching a show last night where they were talking about one of the forward U.S. air operating bases is 3 minutes flight time from the North Korean border. And they don't figure that they'll survive the first artillery barrage. So, it's kind of like, well, why build it there if you don't think it's going to survive? I don't understand. What do I know? I also don't understand Apple, who gave us iOS 11.4 over the weekend, and now my phone won't charge. I should have read the reviews before I downloaded it, huh? Because all the reviews are about how it's killing batteries. And I just think this is Apple's actual attempt to force me to buy a new phone. I have a 5S, and I have no intention of buying another phone anytime soon. I just think this is Apple and Verizon's attempt to get me to force me to buy one. The other big news, of course, in the country is the suicide of Anthony Bourdain, along with, what is her name? I'm going to mess it up. Banks? Spade? Sorry, I'm drawing a blank. Kate Spade. And the recent suicides that these two folks have been involved in. This is a tough scenario, man. It really is. What can you say about these two in a way that doesn't come across. It's almost impossible to talk about suicide. It really is. You can't really have a conversation about it. Everybody says you should. Everybody tells me, oh, we have to talk about it. But you really can't, because nobody can be really honest about it. Nobody can say what they're really thinking and really feeling without either offending someone or hurting someone's feelings or exposing themselves in a way that they don't want to do so. If it's somebody who, for whatever reason, is contemplating suicide, they don't want to talk about it, because then all of a sudden they feel like they're going to have all these people interfering with their lives and delving into lives. And the people who are angry, and I've read some of them, I've heard from some of them about this. Why are these people getting all this attention? You really can't have a reasonable conversation about this in a way that is functionally going to accomplish anything. That's my fear of this whole thing. I've said it before, and I will no doubt, as this conversation continues into the future, I'll say it again. I have never felt the need to or even contemplated the idea that I would somehow be better off dead. It just has never occurred to me. That does not mean I don't think about death. I do, on a pretty regular basis. I'm pushing 55. I have some health issues. I have watched recent days several of my shipmates go through horrifying illnesses and pass on. We lost Kurt back in February. We have another one that we just found out last week has a very rare form of aggressive cancer. And, you know, a week before our reunion, we start seeing these things. And it's not to say I don't think about it, because I do. Much of what I do as far as Facebook and social media, even these shows, is so that if it were something to happen to me, Ben would have the opportunity to get to know me. He would get to hear my voice. He would get to hear my thoughts. He would get to hear my laugh, my anger, the things that bothered me. So yeah, I think I think about it. I certainly think about it a lot more than I did when I was 30. I can tell you that. I certainly question the basic fairness of life and death anymore. I also have come to the point where I don't fear death anymore. There was a time when I was afraid of it. Everybody was, I think. Everybody as a young person, I think, if we take the time to think about it, we're afraid of it. I'm not afraid of it anymore. If it happens, it happens. I've become stoic enough in my life and my understanding of my place in the universe that, you know, look, the truth of the matter is that somebody else somewhere somehow had to cease their existence in order for my existence to come into place, because I'm made out of things from the past. So the future is me. I don't really have that much of a problem with that. Does it mean I'm anxious for it? No. And when you start getting into the element of suicide, when you start getting the element of people who are taking their own lives, you can't really have a discussion. You can't really say what you think, because, again, you're either going to offend somebody or you're going to hurt somebody. Or somebody's going to get mad or frustrated in what you say. But taking that into account, we do have to ask some questions. We do have to look at some things, and we do have to consider some things here, because we're told now that this is a national crisis. According to the CDC, suicides are up, the suicide rate is up so significantly, depending on where you live, that the CDC, the Centers for Disease Control, can't even explain why. They have no idea what's going on. Why is suicide becoming more common? What can be done to reverse the trends? They have no idea, scientists, the CDC, they have no idea what's even causing it. Why are more people doing this? They put out a map over the weekend. You've probably seen it, where it talks about how, you know, it shows the different rates in suicide, and basically every state is significantly up. And they try to put it out there and say, okay, well, why? What's going on here? Is it simply the fact that we have more veterans now with PTSD and combat experiences who are coming home and who are struggling. We've all seen the 22 a day memes. We've all seen the 22 a day figure. And there are those who argue that that 22 a day is enough to significantly increase the rates to the point where that explains it. Which then you get into, okay, what are we doing wrong in dealing with these veterans? What are we doing wrong with these folks who we are not providing proper services to? And have we even analyzed who these veterans are? In other words, are they all veterans of the War on Terror? Are they all veterans of Vietnam? Are they all veterans of, you know, who are they? Do we even break it down by that? And the presumption that I've read in a couple of places is that these are all recent veterans. I don't know if I buy that or not. There was a time, remember, in this country when we had a certain stigma, a certain social viewpoint of what a Vietnam veteran was, and it was all based on Hollywood. It was all based on, you know, entertainment media. All Vietnam vets are crazy, and they want to kill people, and they're antisocial and all that. Remember all that? And what we discovered along the way was it wasn't even remotely true. It wasn't even a question of not being slightly true. It wasn't even not even 0.1% true. And so when I hear this thing about, well, all these PTSD, all these veterans coming back have PTSD, and they're all crazy, and they're all going to kill themselves, you know, and we see even Congress talking about this stuff. Because at that point, what do you, you know, you're creating an image that serves a purpose. But is it the correct image? Is it true? I don't know what's driving the suicide rate. I've read so many articles this weekend about, you know, what's driving this. Let's see. It's because of our culture. Our culture is something wrong with our culture. Many factors, including mental illness, loss of a relationship, loneliness, chronic illness, financial loss, history of trauma or abuse, stigma associated with asking for help. See what I was talking about earlier? You can't really talk about this because then you raise that stigma. And yet, what's the first thing we do? Anytime there's a suicide, the first thing we do, and hell, I did it, is we post something on social media saying, hey, if you need to talk, here, I'm here for you, or call this number. As if somehow or another that's going to encourage people to do that. It's counterintuitive. It's counterproductive. And the more we do that, the more the suicide rate goes up. So it's obviously not working. You can't say, the more we say to people, hey, get help, the higher the rate goes. And what I'm not seeing is articles about the number of people who are going to psychiatrists, going to doctors and saying, hey, I'm thinking about killing myself. Can you help? Can you do something? I'm not seeing where there's reports of that number increasing in concurrence with the number of people committing suicide, which you would think would be happening, but it's not. Let's see. What other reasons are there? I was trying to find the WebMD one here. Let's see. 25% increased sense of isolation among Americans. The rise of technology, which has replaced important face-to-face interactions. Although some argue that technology actually decreases loneliness, but everything they come up with is speculative. Everything they come up with is broad generalizations as opposed to any actual progress. Is it possible to stop suicides? Sure, it's possible. In Detroit, doctors and therapists employed several interventions that led to an 80% drop in their suicide rates. One method involved asking depressed patients how they envisioned dying. Doctors then created systematic roadblocks to ensure that enacting that vision was not possible. For example, remove firearms and following up. knowing what drives suicide and having improved treatment options won't help if people don't reach out for that help is really the issue. One finding in the CDC report is that more than half the deaths happen among people who have not been diagnosed with mental illness, especially men. Quote, we have this big problem, especially among men, that they have undiagnosed and obviously untreated mental health conditions. Often the manifestation of depression is different in men than women. We tend to be a little better in our clinical assessment to diagnose typical depression in women than we are in men. Also said that women tend to be better at asking help for help in the first place. As for the men who do seek help, the indicators are ill-defined, like a propensity to violence or substance abuse. Said that people still won't seek help if they perceive a stigma around depression and mental illness as a whole. It's very brave to be able to say, I feel horrible and I need to reach out, because you are revealing your vulnerabilities, and our culture does not respect vulnerability. So how do you get past that? How do you change that? How do you get people to understand that you can be vulnerable, that you can be part of this, without getting into that area where people start getting upset with you, start getting mad, start getting angry? You can't have this conversation. I've never successfully had this conversation with anybody without somebody ending in tears or yelling. You can't. You're either offensive or you're invasive. And yet we're told we have to change our culture. I wonder, and this is just my opinion, it's my show, it's my opinion, you can take it for what it's, you know, you can take an opinion for what it's worth. I question the lowering of the threshold when it comes to suicide. So we talked about this last week. We talked about it with regards to school shootings. We talked about the fact that the lowering of the threshold was a contributing factor in the increase in number of school shootings. The fact that it's a slow motion riot. Two people who would never throw a brick through a window during a riot of their own volition suddenly see one person throw a brick through a window and they figure, well, if one person's going to do it, I'm going to do it. And so they follow suit. And the threshold is lowered because this person wouldn't have done it by themselves. But now that somebody else is doing it, well, okay. And then there are other people who had higher thresholds, but now they see that coming down and they get involved. And the same is happening with school shootings. We've seen that, particularly with the guy in Santa Fe, where we've watched what's happening and we try to emulate it. And I wouldn't have done it first, but they did it and they became famous. And so I'm going to do it. And then I'm going to do it. And then I'm going to do it. And then I'm going to do it. And more and more people join in. Well, there's a certain level to that in this reporting, in this covering of suicides, isn't there? The more and more famous people do this, the lower and lower that threshold of acceptability becomes. Why? Is there any criticism anywhere that's legitimately accepted of the people who are committing suicide? Anthony Bourdain hangs himself. Robin Williams hangs himself. I don't know what Kate Spade did. I assume it was an overdose. Is there any criticism anywhere in the media for this? Is there any criticism of Mr. Bourdain that, well, maybe he should have just reached out for help. Maybe he shouldn't have been so tough. Maybe he should have been more vulnerable. Maybe he should have opened up. Maybe he shouldn't have done that. Any of that in the media? Does anybody in the media come across as angry at him for his actions, for his decision that he's made? Because, I don't know, pick a reason. It robbed the world of a beautiful person who was entertaining to the rest of us. There isn't any. There's no questioning of it at all. And because there's no questioning of it, what it's presented as, well, he was a creative genius. He was brilliant. He was entertaining. He was loved. He was beloved by everyone. And this is the way that he went. And to someone who maybe isn't in that position, what happens to the threshold when you see that? When there's no questioning of the decision, when there's no public discussion of the idea that this isn't the best way to do this, that maybe he made a mistake, maybe she made a mistake, Maybe they didn't seek help when they should have sought help. Maybe they were weak. Maybe the perception, you know, again, you're not going to see any of that discussion anywhere. And so someone seeing this goes, well, I have similar feelings. And it seems to have worked out for him. I mean, he got his name in the paper. I got to be honest with you. And I don't mean this disrespectfully. I'd never heard of Kate Spade before she committed suicide. I had no idea who she was. Now, I also don't carry purses, and I don't have a wife who is really into fashion. She's just not, that's just not her thing. She has a wallet. I don't even know if she owns a purse, to be honest with you. I really don't know. I don't think she does. And so there's really no reason for me to have ever been involved with that. I never heard of her. But now, every time I open my browser in the news, for the past week, there's been a story about her and Bourdain, suicide rates. And what are we doing wrong? Why can't we solve this? What have we got to do to change this? And we never, in the process of change that, indicate or any way, shape, or form insinuate that maybe they made the wrong decision. And maybe they shouldn't have done that. There was a time in this country, and it wasn't that long ago, when, you know, there was a religious value, a religious component to this, and suicide was looked upon as a great sin by the religious folks. The even that has shifted now to where I have not heard a religious person, with the exception of the Westboro people, criticize this at all. My own faith has taken the approach, the official approach, the general approach, because there really isn't any official. It's just, when we discuss it, it's discussed as the idea of a sane, rational person taking their own life is unacceptable, but people who are mentally ill are not sane and rational. So you can't hold them to the same standard. You can't say, well, rational people don't do that, because they're not rational. There are any number of people who say the same thing about the depression that leads to suicide. And the fact that, you know, we've all been there. We've all had relationships in. We've all had jobs go away. We've all had moments in our lives when we've had the blues. And perhaps they were extended, and perhaps they were difficult. Perhaps they caused us to do things that we wouldn't otherwise do. But how does that stack up with the real devastation of total depression? In the incredible weight that puts on someone. I've been depressed. I've never been clinically depressed. I've never been in that position where, you know, I just didn't want to get out of bed. I mean, I've had days where I don't want to get out of bed, but not because I've never had a day where I couldn't get out of bed other than when I had the flu or a knee surgery, one of the two. But I know of people who literally couldn't get out of bed. I've seen it touch my own life. I have dealt with a person in my own life who tried to kill herself. And I couldn't understand it. I couldn't get my mind around it. I couldn't. Why? What? You have this going, and again, you can't have that conversation, because as soon as I start talking about those things, she says, well, you don't understand. And as soon as that's out there, you don't understand, you don't have a conversation anymore. What you have is an argument. Clearly, we're, as a culture, as a nation, doing something wrong. The only thing I can rationally come up with is the fact that we are, in essence, lowering the threshold by glorifying those that do. By putting, we'll have this argument. Why do we put these shooters' pictures up and names up? All we're doing is giving them glory. What are we doing here? Are we really opening conversations? Because really, if we were going to open conversations, don't you think we would have done that by now? Wouldn't Robin Williams have done that for us? Wouldn't we have looked at that and went, maybe we need to have a conversation, but we didn't. And we're not going to now either. We're going to pretend to. We're going to say, oh, we really should have this. Suicide rates are up. What are we going to do about it? Oh, look, the Tonys are on. Robert De Niro said what? And that's going to be the end of it. Until the next one happens, and then we'll go through the whole thing again. And the threshold will be a little bit lower, a little bit lower, a little bit lower. What I want to see is the numbers of suicides following these major ones. I want to see the numbers that say, okay, Anthony Bourdain hung himself on this day. How many people killed themselves in the ensuing 24 hours, the ensuing 72 hours, the next week? Correlation is not causality. I get that. But if we're going to accept the premise that, you know, there's a lowering of the threshold, there has to be here too. And maybe the way we're talking about this stuff is just as big of a problem. Because there is no criticism of it. There's nobody saying, you know, a couple of people here and there on social media, and of course they immediately get railed upon. But nobody's discussing the idea that this probably wasn't that great of an idea. Can we at least talk about it? Because if we don't, how are we going to get anywhere? It's half past. It's past half past. I got to take a break. My voice is getting weak here. We'll take a little break. We'll be right back right here on the Dave Bowman Show on Podcast 99 Internet Radio Network. You can get me on the text machine 209-565-DAVE. Email us, Dave at thedavebowmanshow.com. And of course, we're on the web. We're on YouTube for the chat room purposes only, as well as on Facebook and Twitter. Stay with us. Back right after this.
Started off as a normal day. I felt fine when I arrived at the plant.
Ruth Junius's life was about to change.
Then I dropped my keys. They kept slipping out of my hand. My arm felt numb. A coworker asked me if I was okay, and I couldn't speak. I started to get scared.
Ruth was having a stroke. People around her weren't sure what to do.
They thought I should go home or lie down, but I knew something was very wrong. I wrote 911 on a piece of paper with my other hand, and someone called for me.
Because everyone acted quickly, doctors at the hospital were able to give Ruth treatment that started to reverse the symptoms.
Within a few minutes, I was talking again. I didn't know a thing about stroke before I had one. Now I make sure that my friends and family know all the signs of stroke so they'll get help fast if they need it.
No stroke. Know the signs. Act in time. Call 1-800-352-9424 for more information. Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, National Institutes of Health.
No word in the English language is less convincing than probably.
Are you sure we should get matching tattoos on our first date?
Sure. We'll probably stay together.
Probably? It's been 23 minutes since I ate. I can probably swim.
You should wait 30 minutes.
Okay, now tell me what to do. Cannonball! Cramp! Oh, I have a cramp.
I can probably hit the green from here.
Probably.
Can I get a mulligan?
Ready to go?
Hey, are you sure you're okay to drive?
Yeah, I'm pretty sober. Yeah, I'm probably okay. Probably okay isn't okay, especially when it comes to drinking and driving. If you're drinking, call a cab, a car, or a friend. Buzz driving is drunk driving. A message brought to you by NHTSA and the Ad Council.
As humans, we ask ourselves all kinds of questions. But what if we were forced to ask ourselves a question every day that affected the outcome of the most basic things, the most important things in our lives? The question is, what is your sexual orientation or gender identity? And the answer is the difference between keeping your job or getting fired. The answer is the difference between staying in your home or getting evicted. The answer is the difference between receiving medical treatment or not. Because in 31 states, it's legal to discriminate against people based on their answer to this question. LGBT Americans have the right to say, I do, but they don't have the same basic rights as everyone else. Get the facts at beyondido.org. Brought to you by the Gill Foundation and the Ad Council.
Every hiring manager knows that a company is only as good as the people it's made from. So where do you find the best people? That may surprise you.
Meet the grads of life. Young adults of unique determination and experience. An ideal fit for your company in an entry-level position, internship, or even mentorship. They might not have every qualification you typically look for, but they're exactly who your company needs.
This is talent worth knowing about.
Go to gradsoflife.org to learn how to find, cultivate, and train this great pool of untapped talent. Brought to you by the Ad Council and gradsoflife.org.
You took the first step and quit smoking, but even former smokers may still be at risk for lung cancer. That's why SaveByTheScan.org wants you to know about a new low-dose CT scan that can detect lung cancer early. It takes only 60 seconds and could save your life. You took the first step, now take the next. Visit SaveByTheScan.org for a simple quiz to see if you're eligible and talk to your doctor about screening. SaveByTheScan.org is brought to you by the American Lung Association's Lung Force Initiative and the Ad Council.
This is the Podcast 99 Internet Radio Network.
Man, not being here Friday has really screwed me up. I know I printed out a bunch of stuff, and now I can't find it. Welcome back. It is the Dave Bowman Show, plausibly live here on the Podcast 99 Internet Radio Network. Text machine open, 209-565-DAVE. Email remains Dave at thedavebowmanshow.com. And, of course, we're on Facebook, Twitter, all that stuff. You know the drill by now. Now, Friday was just a mess. So many things happening at all at the same time. I had the show prepped. I was ready. I was ready to go. I was, boom, let's get on the air. Then Cammy had to go to Tacoma right then. And then something was going on with Ben. And there was something, the real estate business. For those of you who don't know, I dabble, I guess, is the way to put it, in real estate on the side. As even that's not accurate. I do paperwork for a real estate agent. How's that? And the real estate agent needed something done right then, and it was which is unusual. And so, anyway, everything kind of went in a mess on Friday, and I thought, well, I'll just push everything to Monday. It's no big deal. And now I can't find any of the stuff that I had prepped for Friday. Oh, well, I guess they had an election in Iraq. Did you hear about this? This is somewhat amusing, I guess. It's one of those things where I spend a lot of time sometimes doing stuff, and you know, it's anyway, they had an election in Iraq, and the election is controversial. And I guess the Supreme Court of Iraq. No, not the Supreme Court. The Iraqi parliament amended their election law on June 6th to allow for a manual recount of 10 million votes. So they've got these 10 million votes that are disputed. And so the Iraqi parliament says, well, let's just amend those. And oddly enough, the warehouse housing the 10 million votes went up in flames later that afternoon. That's so weird. How that happens. So weird that Putin was talking about the World Cup and World War III on his annual TV show last week. Did you know this? Putin does an annual 4-hour interview live on TV. And the topics ranged from World War III and the fact that he thinks World War III is right around the corner and the World Cup and Russia's chances. Fires and floods can be useful to politicians. Yes, they can. Very useful. All kinds of things can be lost in a fire or flood or whatever. Sorry, hit my microphone thing there. But back to the suicide thing, because it's difficult. It's difficult to have the conversation. And part of the problem is we don't even really know how to approach it, do we? I mean, really. As soon as you say to someone, hey, I'm here for you, what are you really saying? Okay, somebody's struggling, somebody's having a hard time, somebody's, okay, I'm here for you. Are you? You got a life to live. You're off doing your thing. And if I call you and say, hey, you said you'd be there for me, what's the likelihood that I'm interrupting you doing something else? And while there might not be, while you may actually be excited or happy or whatever to help, there is a certain level of inconvenience to it, isn't there? There is a certain level of, I don't want to interrupt people. I don't want to bother people. I go through this myself all the time. I don't want to bother people. I'd rather just do something myself because it's just easier than going to someone and saying, hey, can you do this for me? I don't want to bother other people. I don't want to get in their way. I don't want to. I was having a conversation with my cousin the other day about being a house guest. I hate being a house guest. It's not that I hate other people. That's not what I'm saying. I hate living in other people's houses for more than a few days. You know, you go, you visit, and then you leave. But the longer you stay with somebody, the more frustrated I get because I feel like I'm interfering with their lives. They can't, you know, they're hesitant to set aside things that they want to be doing because now I'm in their way and they feel like they're obligated to me. And I don't want them to feel like they're obligated to me. I'm not a neat freak by any chance, you can look behind me and see I'm not a neat freak, but when I'm in other people's houses, oh my God, I'll sterilize things after I use them just because I'm that way. We don't want to be a burden on other people. And so when someone says to me, or I say to somebody, hey, I'm there for you, I'm here for you, what are we really saying? I'm saying something that it's like thoughts and prayers on social media. It's just something we say because we have to say something without really being committed to anything. So I came across this thing the other day. As I said, a really good friend of mine from the boat beat testicular cancer 20 years ago. Had a hip replacement a couple weeks ago, and in the process of the hip replacement, they discovered a very aggressive form of some form of cancer that I don't pretend to understand what is, but the prognosis is dire. And what do you say at that point? And so I looked around and I thought, you know, he lives in Vermont, so it's not like I'm going to be dropping in on him at any point going, hey, you know, this, that, the other. But it's nice to have something better to say. It's better to have something useful. And maybe it's more applicable to people that are closer, I guess. And I wondered how this would apply then when you're dealing with people who may be having mental issues and contemplating suicide. We always say, let me know if I can do anything. Hey, I'm here if you need somebody to talk to. The caveat being that there's always that understanding of, I might be doing something else. I may not be really available. Think about our culture today. Think about these damn things, right? We can't live without them. And when we used to be, when you called somebody and they didn't answer, you threw a fit. Now it's when you text somebody and they don't immediately respond, we automatically go to, they're ignoring me. They must be ignoring me because they're not responding right away to what I had to say. Don't we? We never stopped to consider the fact. I mean, when I was growing up, and I hate to go back to the old days, Grandpa Dave again. You know, you picked up a phone, you called somebody, and if it was a busy signal, you went, oh, they're on the phone, and you hung up and you went on your way. If you called somebody and they didn't answer, you said, they must not be home. I'll try again later. There was no this presumption of instantaneous communication, and they must be just ignoring me because they didn't respond right away, but that's the way our minds go. And so when we say to somebody, let me know if I can help, or I'm here if you need somebody, and then we're not, how does that help? Anyway, this thing says better suggestions. Hey, concrete, make them concrete. Can I bring you dinner on Tuesday? Do you want me to go with you to your next doctor visit? Hey, I'm going to the grocery store. Do you need anything? More concrete type situations. Don't compare yourself to them. maybe they had the same kind of cancer, maybe they didn't, but everybody's experience is their own, and the same applies to mental health, doesn't it? Sometimes a simple "I'm thinking of you" goes a long way. Send a card, an email. Yeah, because the world's changed. You can talk about your life. You can be upbeat. You can have a real friendship, a real relationship that isn't based solely upon the illness or whatever's going on. Then it gets into things like, sorry, I keep bumping my microphone stand here. That's very unusual for me. Being there, calling first. This, again, most of this applies more to cancer, but some of this really struck me as applicable when you're dealing with people with mental illnesses. Because we clearly what we're doing is not working. Touch is very powerful. A hug can be very communicative. Stop giving advice. Stop telling people what they should do. That's what they have doctors for. Pep talks are tricky, you know. Hey, you can get past this. Maybe they can't. Maybe they just need you to be there to hold there. Somehow or another, we've got to get past that. But our culture really doesn't let us, do we? Does it? We have platitudes that we say. We have certain phrases and certain words that we use. Oh, I'm there for you. Thoughts and prayers. Wish you all the best. And the suicide rate goes up. Not saying we shouldn't not talk about it. But there's a certain point where you reach where someone who is contemplating that sees someone big, famous, do it and thinks to themselves, well, they were successful and big. Maybe I should do it too. That can't be helping. It can't be. But I don't know how you change that. I really don't. I really don't know what the answer is. I do know that I've had to struggle with people in my own life who were clinically depressed, who had major depressive issues. And it's not easy. The first time I went through it, I didn't even know what the hell was going on. I had no idea. None whatsoever. Second time I went through it, I had a few more ideas. But I had no responsibilities for it. It wasn't somebody in my life, but not that I had no responsibilities for. And that changes things too, because now I'm giving advice to the people who are having to deal with this. And I'm realizing now that that was not really helpful. I don't know what we do. A soldier died this week, and I'm sure you heard this. A special forces soldier killed in Somalia. 4 injured. In Somalia. I don't know how many times I have to say this. Apparently it's, well, as long as this goes on. I have no problem with the war on terror. I don't have a philosophical problem with the idea of a long war. I have a philosophical problem with a war that we've not debated, discussed, declared, and has no strategic goals and no idea of where it's headed. And I still don't know what was worth an American life in Somalia. Haven't we already been there, done that? I'm getting, I spent a lot of time this weekend with my grandson and my son, who are 6 months apart. That's one of the oddities of my life, that my grandson is 6 months older than my son, which makes it funny when he calls him uncle and tries to be, authoritative when Ben tries to get authoritative and say, well, I'm the uncle, so I get to make the rules. It's kind of funny. But I look at these two little boys, 8 years old, and I think, 10 years, is this thing still going to be going on? Are we still going to be operating on the 2001 and 2003 authorizations for use of military force? And are we still going to be fighting in places that have no common reason, no common sense reason whatsoever to be in? Somebody please explain to me what was worth one American life, much less four more injured, in goddamn Somalia? What national security interest was there that we had to do this? And why can't we talk about it? Why can't Congress stand up and say, okay, there is an issue in Somalia, and we need to declare war on Somalia. And we need to fight this war the way we need to fight this war and get it over with. Instead of pussyfooting around like we're doing. This is not how you fight a war. This is how you keep armaments companies in business. And I'm the conservative hawk here, folks. It's frustrating. It really is. And it's just going on and on and on. And it's getting to the point where even the vehement anti-war people are yawning now when they read it. They don't even care anymore. I don't know how you get around that. I don't know how you get people to do that, to care about that anymore. Let alone whether or not people are committing suicide. And which ones really matter? Does Anthony Bourdain's matter more than Kate Spade's, or does Kate Spade's matter more than 22 veterans every day who are committing suicide? And do those 22 veterans matter any more than all the other people who are committing suicide? That we don't seem to know what to do about, we don't seem to know what to say, because the problem, the rates are going up. And nobody knows why. Nobody can figure it out. Nobody can put a finger on it and go, well, maybe this is why. Nobody can put a finger on why we're in Somalia. Oh, I'm sure they have a reason. There was some terrorist there who in his entire life has probably never left Somalia, but, you know, we had to get him. Who knows? Google no longer accepting political ads in Washington state. Why, you might ask? Washington state has sued Google and Facebook. So this, I'm sure that this is going to happen to Facebook too. Washington State's Attorney General has sued Google, claiming that Google is in violation of our state law, yay us, because we still got net neutrality and they don't. At any rate, we filed a lawsuit saying they're not being transparent in who's paying for these ads, so they can't have these ads. Look, how often does that matter to a voter? How often? I know it's Russian collusion. I get it. We're all upset about the Russians paid for $155,000 worth of ads that convinced millions of people to vote for Trump. I get it. I get the narrative. I don't believe it, but I get it. At the same time, how many people have ever looked at a Slate mailer or a, you know, TV commercial and paid any attention to that part on the bottom, which is paid for by people for this and with no affiliation to the candidate? Blah, 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 blah. I mean, really, when has anybody ever looked at that and go, ha, 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 well, this ad sounds great, but I don't like those people, so I'm not going to listen to this ad? I'll tell you what I think this is. And I think the state law is a little, I don't know, naive, I guess. Political advertising is big money. Do you know that? Most of your AM talk radio stations, that's what they survive on. They make so much money during political campaigns that then they can spread it out over time. In fact, they go out of their ways to free up time to pack more political ads in. Especially if they have a local show. If they don't have a local show, it doesn't work as well because your big shows are on pretty strict clocks. But your local shows, they can cut into those quite significantly. And do so because that's where they can make the money. I can tell you this because I've experienced this. I watched a show that I'm very familiar with, mine, go from basically 44 to 46 minutes an hour of content to less, in some cases, as low as 22, 23 minutes. This is where they make that money. And I'm wondering now is if this law's purpose is more along the lines of killing political advertising in general, particularly because it funds conservative talk radio, than it really is about whether or not Google, because Google doesn't care, than it is about anything else. We'll see, I guess. Look, if you need help, I can say it, get help. I don't know why we say it. People don't listen, but it's depressing. Promise I'll be try to be more upbeat tomorrow in the whole thing. I got to get going. Take the time right now. Tell the people who matter in your life that you love them very much. You'd miss them if they weren't there, so don't pass up those opportunities. You don't want to have that regret. And maybe that'll be the difference in their lives. They just know that somebody actually gives a damn. You never know, I guess. We'll be back tomorrow with a Tuesday episode of The Big Show. Stay tuned. Coming up at noon, Tim Preuss will be here. He's got a lot to say about the Charles Krauthammer announcement and some pretty good stuff there he'll be talking about right here on the Podcast 99 Internet Radio Network. Have a great rest of your Monday, everybody, and we will see you tomorrow, Tuesday, 10 a.m. By then, we'll know what's going to happen in the Koreas, right? We'll find out. See you tomorrow, everybody.
Possibly Live is a Slippery Fish Entertainment production for the Podcast 99 Network. To contact Dave directly, call or text area code 209-565-DAVE. That's 209-565-3283. The email address is dave@thedavebowmanshow.com. For more information or to hear past shows, go to www.plausiblylive.com.
Hey, I'm going to go do something productive. I'm going to go watch television.